You're listening to the Jefferson Exchange. Thanks for joining us. The JX starts today with the debrief, where JPR reporters discuss the stories they've been covering this week, including a green cemetery in Humboldt County and a new kind of timber plant coming to Redding. I'm Maria Carter, JPR's news director.
I'm Jane Vaughn, housing, homelessness, and education reporter.
And I'm Justin Higginbottom, public health and safety reporter.
Justin, you had an update on salmon returning to the Klamath River after dam removal. Many celebrated when they saw images and videos of these fish. It was an exciting time. But you report that some people are worried. Why is that?
Yeah, so it was pretty exciting. And just to be clear, no one I spoke to isn't happy that salmon have finally returned up the Klamath River. But kind of what worries them is where the salmon are heading. So I talked with the manager of the Klamath Drainage District. This district deals with agricultural uses of the Klamath River, and they manage canals and like diversion points for the waterway. And like everyone else, he was really excited when, you know, he saw those images last month of salmon making it past those former dam sites, really for the first time in over 100 years. That's why people were so excited. But what made him nervous is when the salmon appeared in the district's canals. So those canals are used to divert water from the river to a number of places, but including farmland and agricultural use. And so what worries him is that the fish will be washed out with the irrigation water, which isn't good for the fish, obviously. They're trying to make it to spawning grounds and then do that whole process. So they'd be stuck in farmland. Also not good for the farmers, though, because they don't want potentially protected salmon on their land or people driving past their property taking photos of dead salmon on their property. That's kind of bad PR.
Yeah. I don't think I would want to smell that either.
Right.
Well, you report on a solution to the problem. Tell us, what are fish screens and what do they do?
Right. So the solution is fish screens. So these are placed at diversion points on the canal so the fish like aren't washed out with the irrigation water. And this issue was brought to our attention because installing fish screens in this district has been really a long time coming. So way back in 2016, there was the Klamath Power and Facilities Agreement that was made among state, federal, and other stakeholders in the Klamath Basin as they were going through the process of removing these dams. And there was a lot of stakeholders there. But that set a goal to limit new regulatory burdens on irrigators from the reintroduction of fish species, including, you know, salmon species. And part of the agreement was to support fish screens through funding and construction, but they just haven't been installed everywhere, like in these canals in this drainage district. The Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife says they have been working on it, but it's just not as easy as it sounds. Funding is always an issue. Also, each fish screen must be tailored to each site's unique flow and sediment level.
So you can't, it's not just like an off-the-shelf solution.
Yeah, exactly. And with the Klamath River, you know, conditions vary, and so that rules out just simple designs, according to the agency, where you can just mass produce these and just plug them in. Also, demand for fish screens from landowners has outpaced supply. So the drainage district is kind of ringing the bell here and saying it's time to put these in. There's been enough time has passed, and you know the fish are here. The fish are in our canals. We can see them.
If not now, when?
Right.
You report that salmon being in these canals isn't necessarily a bad thing.
Right. And with the, especially with the fish screens, if they're installed, it's not a big issue. In fact, the drainage district actually has a plan to use one of these canals to potentially connect salmon to the Lower Klamath National Wildlife Refuge. That project's called the Addy Canal Reconnection Project. It sounds pretty cool, but it would provide sort of a highway for the salmon using this Addy Canal to spawning grounds, potential spawning grounds at least, at the refuge. You know, the fish already seem very interested in getting to these canals, so The district is kind of, you know, wants to let them go where they want and potentially reach new spawning grounds. But like I mentioned, the canal needs fish screens for that to work. The ODFW recently received $1.25 million in Oregon lottery bond funds for fish screens. And this drainage district in Klamath is working with federal and state agencies on a $4.5 million multi-screen project within this Addy Canal. But that first screen is planned for 2026, pending funding approval. So we kind of have to wait to see how okay. that goes.
So it's going to be a little bit of before we have these fish screens right. really up and running.
Yeah, and in the meantime, fish are in the canal. They can see it.
Okay, thanks, Justin. Jane, you wrote a story about a new green cemetery coming to Humboldt County. First, tell us, what is a green cemetery?
It's an interesting idea. I had heard of before but was not super familiar with it. But basically, it's allowing bodies to decompose in a more environmentally friendly way. So it's, you know, it's a cemetery. It's a field. But there's no concrete vaults for the bodies. There's no plastic liners. The body is not embalmed. It's just sort of wrapped in a shroud that will decompose. And so basically the goal is trying to encourage more natural decomposition. The body is buried at a certain depth in the soil to sort of encourage that process. And so the plan is there's this nonprofit called Sacred Groves that will open a cemetery. It'll be about 44 acres of the cemetery, and it's about half an hour drive from Eureka in Humboldt County. And so they have a few different burial options on the site of where you could choose to be buried. So forest land, grassland, there's a restoration area that's oak savanna, so you could choose to be buried there. And then there's all sorts of things that, again, help make it sort of more environmentally friendly and have less ecological impact. So the graves will be dug by hand. There will be no above ground grave markers. So it's an interesting idea. Apparently it's the first of its kind in Humboldt County.
And how did the approval process for this work?
So the Humboldt County Planning Commission recently approved this project unanimously, and they, like me, also seemed to think it was an interesting topic. They said, you know, it's a really interesting discussion, one of the most intriguing topics they've ever had come before the Planning Commission. Again, it doesn't sound like they've you know, approve one of these before. And most of the public comment that the county received was really in favor of this project and this sort of new option. There have been some concerns in recent years in general about overcrowding in cemeteries and sort of the environmental impact of how we traditionally, or not traditionally, but currently are burying bodies in cemeteries and doing that. So one of the people who spoke at the meeting is named Jennifer Wheeler. She's on Sacred Grove's Board of Advisors, and she obviously really likes the project.
I don't want my last contributing act on this earth, if at all possible, to be adding to more human-caused pollution. No cremation carbon emissions, no forever garbage in or on the ground, no plastic flowers, no polyester flags.
So that's the basic gist of it, the basic goal. So I basically watched through the meeting, looked through all the documents and paperwork. Again, there's a staff report saying that the carbon footprint for a green burial is 1/15 what it is for a traditional burial and 1/10 that of cremation. And the only concern the commissioners really had was potentially about wild animals digging up the bodies, or even, you know, dogs, pets, because they're not buried 6 feet down like we might expect. So the applicant for this project, Michael Furness, said he had discussed potentially conducting some tests by burying some animals in shallow graves to see what would happen. But he really thought that wildlife disturbing the sites was highly unlikely. He says that just does not happen and it's really not a concern. But the commissioners still voted that for this cemetery, the minimum burial depth has to be 18 inches of cover. And then the applicant, Michael Furness, also has to create a protocol in case there is animal disturbance. So he still has to do those couple
things.
And
why these shallower graves versus like a 6 foot down type grave?
It has to do with the, I always get this mixed up, aerobic versus anaerobic layers of the soil.
Yeah.
And apparently, again, whichever one it is best for that decomposition. So there's a sort of range that you want the body to be in, apparently, that is not 6 feet.
Yeah, so all the bacteria and stuff
exactly.
is up in that top layer,
exactly.
not down low. And when will the cemetery open?
It's a great question. Like I said, the applicant, Michael Furness, still has to finalize a last few key details for the project. So I don't think a date has been set yet. It's a little bit to be determined. But the Sacred Groves website says it'll be open in just a few months. So we'll see.
Okay, thanks, Jane. And Justin, we're heading back to you now. You also had a story on the state's first large-scale mass timber factory coming to Reading. What is mass timber? I feel like we're doing a lot of definitions today.
Yeah. I got to learn a lot this week. I had no idea what mass timber was before I reported on this story, which was nice. So mass timber, it's a layered wood product that's engineered for use in large structures. So mass comes from the word massive. And it's designed to be used as an alternative to concrete and steel, actually. So you can imagine a bunch of layers of wood, either glued or nailed together, just using some sort of adhesive, which increases the strength of the wood, and to the point where you could even use it in skyscrapers, like quite massive, like structures, large structures.
Yeah, I saw one just looking this up that was in, I think it was Milwaukee, that was more than 20 stories high.
Yeah, which has been paused. I'll bring that up.
Okay, great.
But yeah, and you know,
I didn't read far enough.
You know, this method, it was invented in Europe actually decades ago, but lately it started to catch on in the States and it has moved here, and more firms and construction companies have become interested in it for a number of reasons. So there's been some recent changes first to state building codes, which makes it even possible to use mass timber in large buildings. That wasn't the case quite recently. It also supposedly, supporters say it can be faster to build with because a lot of these mass timber components are prefabricated. It also produces fewer emissions than with traditional materials like concrete. Building with concrete and transporting concrete, you have a pretty large CO2 footprint there. So it's seen as a greener construction alternative. Even though we're talking about wood too, it actually has a pretty good fire rating. So it's not like the normal wood you build a house with that can catch fire that easily. And so design firms chose Reading recently for this 200,000 square foot facility, a pretty big facility, which is expected to employ up to 150 people making mass timber products. And many of those will be based in Reading, according to the businesses.
Now, so you've given us all the great things about mass timber. Are there any downsides?
Yeah, right now, the biggest downside that I could see is the cost. So right now, it's just not cheaper than concrete. And that's where the factory comes in. So the design firm that I spoke with, they said it needs mass timber projects. They need to be built at scale, really, to bring down the price. And so that's why we have this large-scale factory planned. And the hope is that this will actually bring down the cost below concrete and more construction companies will want to use it. You know, a lot of the production and fabrication with mass timber products happens in the factory rather than on the construction site. So workers are basically producing prefabricated parts that can just be shipped directly to building sites. So that's also a unique component compared to concrete or steel here.
And where does the factory plan to source its wood from?
That's another interesting part of this project. So the factory will source at least some timber from fuels reduction projects in the region. So, you know, what's left over from tree thinning and stuff, the company is hashing that out right now with Cal Fire and the Forest Service. But they say there's a lot of species of tree they can use, which generally aren't used in traditional wood buildings. So they can take advantage of that supply. It's still unclear how much of the wood will be sourced from fuels reduction projects, and it seems unlikely. You know, they can't use brush, for example, but tapping into that resource I thought was interesting. Other than that, the factory will source timber from normal mills, like especially local and regional mills, according to the company, which is helpful, they say, for supply chain issues like tariffs or pandemic or whatnot. We've seen how reliant on foreign goods and especially building materials we are. And so having a factory and timber sources in the same state or country should help with that. And, you know, so the mass timber, that skyscraper you mentioned Milwaukee, that was the Edison skyscraper. And it was meant to be the world's tallest mass timber project. That's actually stalled in construction. They're blaming the tariffs and increased costs, but you can see how not having different supply chain components in the United States can kind of stop these projects.
Like if they're having to import that mass timber from elsewhere.
Exactly.
It raises that cost. You also report there's an educational component to this factory. Tell us about that.
Right. So the companies are working with Shasta College, which is a local community college, as well as some universities, and they're developing a curriculum to train future mass timber workers. Not sure quite what that curriculum will look like, but this is a kind of high-tech industry. There's a lot of automation, a lot of machines. So the hope is that this factory and the local college can help train workers and make Reading really a center for this industry, not only in the state, but, you know, nationwide. California right now is the largest market right now for mass timber, But the hope is that this expands and Redding can help supply really the whole region with mass timber. It is going to take some time to get off the ground. The factory, which will be in Redding's Stillwater Business Park, is scheduled to open in late 2027.
Okay, thanks, Justin. That's it for the debrief this week. Thanks for listening. You can reach the newsroom with comments on our coverage and suggestions for things we should cover in the future through our news tip line. That's on our website, ijpr.org. And you can find this program and more at jeffexchange.org or on your favorite podcast platform.